history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some incredible stories out there just waiting to be told, and we'll never know unless we take a little time to ask some questions and listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and the sacrifices they've made. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget that price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we set out on that journey, we sure do learn a lot. We're educated, we're always entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And you're not going to believe it when you hear him talk, but our guest today is 98 years old. We're sitting in the same home that he's lived in since 1949 in Merced, California. A veteran of the 84th Infantry Division in World War II and a recipient of the Bronze Star. John Parker, our guest today. And Mr. Parker, you didn't grow up around these parts. You were born in Arizona?
I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, a little village by the name of Levine, southwest 12 miles right up against the South Mountains. And we lived there until I was in high school, and then we moved to Tempe. But living in Levine was a very primitive. We had a farmhouse, and my dad farmed for cotton. We had very few amenities, outhouse back in the corner, no indoor bath at all. But that was the way we lived, and we experienced a lot of dust storms, and you've seen pictures of dust coming over the South Mountains, and we experienced that, and all the dust that would go through the house. I was so sorry for my mother. It was terrible. But we lived there. And then when the Depression came in 1929, and my father lost his farm. We didn't own the farm, but it was leased, and so the owners wanted the farm back. And so we moved to Tempe because my two brothers wanted to go to college. And so we moved there, and my dad got a job. I think he had a little pull from the former principal at my grammar school in Levine. And he got a job working for the county as a road foreman for a crew of people that worked on the county roads there in Phoenix, Maricopa County.
You know, you mentioned growing up there, and I think you used the word primitive for the amenities that you had there. And people today might not grasp this, but you mentioned the bathroom facilities. What about the chores you had to do? I imagine as one of the sons, you probably had a few things you had to do around that cotton farm.
I was the youngest. When my grandfather moved in 1918 from Harrison, Arkansas. He sold his hardware store there and moved with his five daughters and one son. That was my father, and they moved to Phoenix. We farmed there, and I was the youngest, and so I had a lot of chores to do. I was in charge of keeping the big iron wood stove in the living room where we all lived and bathed. In a big tub, and that was I had a lot of job. Chickens, I took care of the chickens and learned to kill them and dress them, pull the feathers off and all those things. And my brothers worked on the farm mostly. I was too young, and I helped my mother a lot in the house. Although my dad said, now we've got four boys and Nona needs help in the house. So we all learned how to work in the house. We learned in the kitchen and do chores and so on, except my older brother, he was the boss. He wanted to be the boss, so he didn't enjoy much of those chores. But it was good training for us.
You mentioned losing the farm and moving to the city, and that happened so long ago. I know it's just a part of your story now. But at the time, was that a big shock to your system? Was that a jolt?
Well, it was a jolt for us because the house we lived in were very primitive and had about three rooms and a big porch around on two sides of the house completely, and that's where we lived and slept. And when we moved to Tempe, when we left there, it was different, but the houses were newer houses. They all had bathrooms, which was a great surprise. Not a surprise, but It was a new experience for us. But it was an experience moving from a farm in Levine until we moved to Tempe.
And when you have older brothers like that, I know they toughen you up to some degree, and maybe you learn a few things from them too. Do you remember as a kid having this dream or ambition of someday when I grow up, I'm going to do this?
I liked mathematics, and so I ended up taking math and accounting courses in college. But I never really wanted to be like a fireman or that sort of thing. I sort of gravitated into accounting and bookkeeping. I had an older brother. My brother Miller ended up in accounting also. And then my other two brothers, they were farmers, and they helped my dad mostly when he was farming. And then they both ended up farming later on in life. But it was a challenge.
And how many of you four boys ended up in the military during the war?
All four of us. Well, and three of us were in Europe, and my brother Jim was in Air Corps that time, not Air Force, it was Air Corps. He was also an officer and ended up teaching in Illinois at an Air Force base, teaching aircraft mechanics.
And we're going to get into your own military story, but this would be a jolt to the system, too. You're playing basketball for Tempe High School in Arizona, and your parents tell you, oops, we're moving to California. That had to be a curveball for you.
Well, it was a real jolt, you know, and I was on the team at Tempe High. But there was a possibility. I had a good friend there, and his father was postmaster in Tempe, and I suppose it was a possibility that I could stay with them to finish out my year. But my mother and dad said, no, I think you should go with us, and so I did. But it was a jolt, and I've always been very shy. And then going from Tempe, where I was, into Stratford and Lemoore High, it was a shock because I was, you know, here middle of my senior year, didn't know anybody. Lived out in the country. I wanted to play basketball, but we bussed in and out and you know, and then had practice after school and that sort of thing. I couldn't participate in that, but I got along.
And for folks who don't know, Stratford, California is one of those places that fits the if you blink, you'll miss it proverb, doesn't it?
It does, that's right. Although now it's fairly close to the Naval Air Base at Lemoore. Yeah, there's not much.
Well, and you probably saw that base being constructed when it was an Army airfield during World War II, right?
No, I didn't. But by that time, I was gone, and my dad had also gone from the farm that he managed at Stratford, cotton farm, and then he had moved to Corcoran to farm on his own. He leased some land at Corcoran. By that time, I was working in Moore Dry Dock in Oakland.
But before that, you did go to school at Fresno State. And I'm curious, since I do all the football and basketball and baseball games and all that for the Bulldogs, those teams of the late 1930s in football that Jimmy Bradshaw had were pretty good. Do you remember anything about going to those games or watching them?
Oh, yeah, I did. We got them all. And one thing that we did, Stockton was our COP was our big adversary, and I remember we took train cars to go, the whole school, if they wanted to, could go. Yeah, that was sort of fun. My first year, I went out for basketball, and I was put onto the Frosh team, and then got my little letter. But then after that, I was so busy, I didn't have time for sports.
I can tell your memory's really sharp, and everybody that I know that was alive on December 7th, 1941, seems to remember something about that day. How did you find out about what happened out at Pearl Harbor?
I was in school. I remember the big announcements on radio and all that, but it was really a shock.
How soon did you realize that this is something you could end up involved in at some point?
Well, I realized that because there was a draft system was on. They were drawing numbers and really didn't have any idea, but there's always a chance that I could have been called any time, so that was one reason why I didn't go ahead and finish my final year at Fresno State. I lived at this house, the Heises, and they had lived in Chowchilla, and then they had moved to Fresno. And while they were in Chowchilla, my brother was working for the Cotton Oil Company and lived there. So he said, I know a place that you might live when you go into Fresno State. And so I did. I went there and lived there for 2 years, and their daughter and I fell in love. The third year, my mother and her mother said, I think it's time for John to move out. So I did. I moved over to frat house and lived there and worked part-time for my room and board.
You left Fresno State because it was your brother's idea to go work on ships?
Well, we decided that I probably would be drafted, and he was about ready to join. He joined the Air Corps. And I took lessons in welding in Corcoran there at a machine shop. And he had already learned a little about welding at home. And so when we went to Oakland, they gave us a test at Moore Dry Dock, a welding test, and we passed, and they hired us.
Was that just an opportunity for you work-wise, or was that something where you felt, I'm doing this for my country and I'm helping the cause?
Well, I think it was probably both, because there was a great need for employees. You know, a lot of the people were going to the service. There was a need, and we had a friend that in Corcoran at that time, and he was working for the same company, Moore Dry Dock, in Oakland. And so he said they had a dire need for welders. They're building victory ships and also doing all kinds of repair. And so we decided that at least we'll help out and also make a little money. So that's what we did. Because of our lack of skills, we started welding just flat, on the decks and doing flat work. But then we moved from that into repair work. We had ships coming in from all over Russia and France and needed repair. A lot of them were old, and we'd go down into the bottoms of the ships, and we did a lot of welding of rivets. They had been used rivets, and they needed to be welded around the rivets so they wouldn't leak. So that was one of our big jobs, and we ended up on the graveyard ship also.
Was your expectation that you would just keep doing that and not end up in the service, or were you kind of just waiting for Uncle Sam to say, hey, it's your turn?
Well, it was getting close. We knew that I could probably be called any time. So then we decided, Irene, who was the daughter, and we decided to get married.
So they told you had to move out, but they didn't say you can't date our daughter.
No, that's right. No, that was okay. But I was only three blocks away, so it was okay.
So you're drafted. You don't know where you're going to end up, but you have to know that your life could be in jeopardy, and you decide to ask her to marry you anyway. Was there any hesitation on your part?
No, I don't think so. We just loved each other and had gone together for a couple of years and decided that that's what we wanted to do. It was always a risk from her standpoint, of course, that I could be wounded or anything happen. So anyway, we decided to get married, which we did. I was married in the First Presbyterian Church in Fresno.
So you're married in January of 43, and when did you get your draft notice?
Oh, draft notice was about the same time, and that was for March, a little over a month away.
So a little more than a month after you got married, you had to report.
I had to report, yeah. We got a bus in Fresno, and it took us over to Monterey, Presidio in Monterey, and that's where we were inducted.
Was it hard to say goodbye?
Yes, it was. It was bad.
And I've got a feeling that she probably wrote you a letter or two during this time period.
She wrote me a lot of letters. And I, of course, wrote her a lot of letters. But I didn't save letters. She saved every letter. And I still have a box of letters that I wrote to her. I was in the infantry, and I didn't have any way to save letters.
But some of the letters she saved that you still have are letters you probably wrote in a foxhole or pretty close to the front lines.
Oh, sure, yeah. We would be online for a while, and then pull back, and then you had rest and relaxation. And
you mentioned you ended up in the infantry, the 84th Infantry Division, but before that, you thought you were going to be doing something else in the Army?
When I went into the Army and I was inducted into the Army, they sent me and a lot of others from Presidio to Texas to activate the 651st Tank Destroyer Battalion. And we got there, and they had the cadre there, all the sergeants and the lieutenant. That was in northern Texas, Brownwood, Texas. So we took training there. Then we had advanced training down at Camp Hood. It was Camp Hood at that time. Now it's Fort Hood. And then we went on maneuvers in Louisiana. The battalion was all ready to go overseas, and they decided that they didn't need tank destroyers because the war had moved from Africa into Italy. A different terrain, different needs. So they deactivated our battalion.
And what were the things that you had trained for as far as the weaponry or the strategy that you guys would be employing?
Tank destroyers were actually an artillery unit. They were not on the front lines with the tanks, but were held back and line of sight fire. whereas in artillery, they have a forward observers to see how you're doing, and tank destroyers would fire line of sight with the big guns. We started out with half tracks because they had not manufactured enough tank destroyer units to satisfy our need in the battalion. We trained with those, and then we got the brand new ones, and then we trained on the firing range and made a lot of noise.
So you're with this tank destroyer battalion, then they say, oops, don't need those anymore. And now you're in the regular infantry. How did you feel about that?
We thought that was terrible. Nobody wants to be in the infantry. And so we were. And we went to infantry training and basic and advanced. From then, of course, we were not a unit at that time because everybody would become just a replacement. And most of them went to Europe. I don't think of anybody that I knew that went from there to Pacific.
It's time for our first break, but when we come back, 98-year-old John Parker will share his first taste of combat with the 84th Infantry Division, some of the challenges he faced during the Battle of the Bulge, and the daring patrol that would earn him the Bronze Star. You can read the citation for that medal and find other photos of John at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.